It seemed like such an easy job. Break into the old neighbor's house, grab her jewelry, get out. There was no dog, no motion detector lights, nothing that would make it all that difficult. Mike would get a little bit of merchandise to garner some extra cash, and there would be a little payback for the way she treated his dad, spreading lies about him to the neighbors. Simple as that. At least it seemed that simple. He had gone and bought a ticket to a movie at the nearby theater, had his ticket torn by the attendant, but then walked right by the particular theater entrance and out the exit to go back home. And he didn't know why, but he grabbed his dad's pistol. He had downed a few beers before to steel himself before he crept over there. And his heart was racing despite how easy this was supposed to be. But then the basement door was locked, unlike its usual status. And Mike checked the windows. None opened. The back door had a little window beside the doorknob. He figured it would make the least amount of noise. Plus, he would have to come up the basement stairs. Quicker to get in and get out. He could feel the sweat form on his brow as he willed his hand to smash the glass. What took forever in his mind was over in a moment with the tinkle of glass falling on the floor. Mike wasted no more time and burst in. He wasn't worried about noise since her hearing was fairly deficient. But her son's wasn't. Unbeknownst to Mike, her grown son was in town this weekend to help with taxes. When he heard the glass, he grabbed a golf club and came out of the spare bedroom swinging. Mike was scared beyond belief. There was a whirl of activity, struggle and tussle, grasping and clawing. Mike feared for his life. All he knew is that he wanted to get away. Without thinking, almost as if by instinct, Mike grabbed that pistol and fired off a few quick rounds into the other man's chest. And everything went silent. His fear, which up until that moment had been driving him to flee and get out, now had his feet frozen to the floor while he watched the life force fade from the man bleeding on the floor. Mike knew immediately that nothing else was ever going to be the same. Life had been irreparably altered. Stirrings came from the next room. A bedside lamp clicked on and called out, "Is everything okay?" Clearly, the old woman's hearing could at least register the noise of 3 gunshots. Again, his fear told him to flee, and he ran. Ran like he never had. And he slipped into the night, away from eyes opened by the commotion. There was the usual and understandable uproar. Local news channels were there covering this burglary in the quiet neighborhood gone wrong. As the police talked and asked questions, the conflict between the old woman and Mike's dad became known. Property lines and costly taxes were at stake. Then there was someone who spoke up and told about the vicious verbal altercations that were witnessed. Being a lawyer, Mike's dad knew the law, but there were some conflicting records which gave rise to the dispute. And his desire to run for office was well known so the old neighbor was constantly claiming that he was seeking special treatment. And so the level of discourse had ratcheted up recently. And so it did not take long before the authorities began seeking out Mike's dad for questioning. Soon everyone was looking at Mike's dad as the prime suspect. Headlines in the newspaper read, "Prominent lawyer, alleged shooter." Throughout it all, Mike's dad kept quiet, heeding the advice he had given so often to keep quiet and say nothing. And justice would have miscarried. Mike's dad would have been a sitting duck, but one investigator, while looking at shoes, knocked over Mike's boots. He saw a glimmer, And when he checked, he found glass embedded in the soles, glass that matched the glass of the window Mike had broken to gain entrance to the old woman's house. All of this led to a dramatic scene at the police station with the investigators and attorneys from all sides. The new evidence was unveiled, and Mike felt like he had been punched in the gut. His body was again frozen. He could not will it to move out of that room and run again. Here it was. Everything was crashing down on him. There were the threats of long jail times, maybe even the death penalty. And he could only sit there and watch until his father spoke. I wore his boots. It was an accident. I'm the one you want. The authorities remained suspicious. They had worked out the timelines. They feel fairly certain it was Mike. But the prosecuting attorney didn't really mind one or the other. A conviction was a conviction. And it removed Mike's dad from any possible competition for his office. And before Mike knew it, he was chiming in, unbelievably, on their side, giving over information that would bring about his father's guilty judgment. And throughout it all, Mike's father remained quiet, going along with all the forces, giving up his life for the sake of his son. As Law and Order ads would promise, ripped from the headlines, really? Or ripped from the passion narrative? Isaiah proclaimed, "But he was wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the punishment that made us whole, and by his bruises we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have all turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and was afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, and like a sheep that before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By a perversion of justice he was taken away. Who could have imagined his future? For he was cut off from the land of the living, stricken for the transgression of my people. They made his grave with the wicked and his tomb with the rich, although he had done no violence, and there was no deceit in his mouth." In the Gospel of John, Jesus continually talks about laying down his life. I lay it down to take it up again. He lays down his life. It is never taken from him. While Jesus proclaims unconditional love and forgiveness through him and in the coming reign of God, Jesus knows that he must enter into this life as a human, surrounded by the powers of sin, and subject himself to their rejection. He voluntarily enters into the participation with the powers that conspire against him, rejecting him and his promises. His silence in the midst of the injustice is in part a collusion with them. He enters into this judgment, having thus became a collaborator with sin, but not out of any sense of personal gain. Christ joins with them, taking this sin upon him, not for any gain for himself, but out of solidarity and love, to become sin as one who knew no sin. The Lutheran Danish theologian Regan Prenter has written that Christ does not become a participant in man's guilt through temptation. In that event, he would not have been the Redeemer, but a sinner. He enters into man's guilt voluntarily. He does it through the solidarity of love, which would rather perish along with those it loves than possess its own complete blessedness apart from them. The price of forgiveness, which is always paid by the forgiver and not the one being forgiven, is paid by Jesus so that we might be truly forgiven and not merely pardoned, not have our guilt merely set aside, although always hanging there around us. Jesus' death pays the price for our transgressions so that we might be truly forgiven and not merely said to be. In Jesus' death, the powers of division, destruction, and chaos, that is sin, death, and the devil, are answered by the coming to completion of the creative power of God. Our fallen, defective natures are healed and made whole. And Prenner writes further, we call this sacrifice atonement, because it removes forever the enmity between God and man which came into the world through sin. It destroys sin, death, and the devil, the law's condemnation, and the wrath's punishment. The remembrance of this sacrifice, then, removing the hostility between God and human beings, should move us to contemplate what a great cost Christ paid for us so that we may be united with him. This sacrifice, while promising that we will never be apart from him, also moves us to see all sufferings in light of the cross. Our life, now bought out of slavery by the cross, allows us to see our lives and the world around us in need of that promise. We become agents of the redemptive action of the cross. If Christ has suffered once for all in solidarity with us, then all other sufferings are needless. We may see Christ there on the cross as our fellow human beings suffer hunger and want, live without homes, are exploited by profiteers, as women are forced into prostitution, and children are counted as worthless and discarded. Christ hangs in their midst on his cross, calling us to stand out of love in solidarity with them, so that we might lift up his words of unconditional forgiveness and point to the final reign of God when all these sufferings will be finally destroyed due to his sacrifice. Thanks be to God. Amen.